Apple making history Thursday, becoming the first U.S. company valued over $1 trillion. Apple has been hovering near this record for months, finally pushing it over the $1 trillion line, a strong earnings report for the third quarter, and an upbeat outlook released Tuesday.
Starbucks says they're teaming up with Alibaba in China to take their coffee on the road. On Thursday, the company launched a partnership with the Chinese e-commerce giant in a bid to shore up sales in its second biggest market. The company's been facing stiff competition from local coffee startups who've gotten a head start. They're already bringing coffee to their customers' front door. The tie-up will allow Starbucks to piggyback on Alibaba's extensive delivery network.
Condé Nast, the company behind renowned fashionista magazine Vogue, is looking to sell three of its 14 titles, Brides, Golf Digest, and W. That's according to the New York Times, citing more than a dozen anonymous sources within the company. They say CEO Robert Sauerberg plans to meet with senior staff members on August 8th to discuss recommendations from an outside consulting group, following the company's reported loss of more than $120 million in 2017 and layoffs of some 80 employees.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August the 3rd, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for being with us again for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've got a great show for you today, as usual. Paul Nolte is here from KingsView Asset Management. We're going to talk about the jobs report today, some more about the economy and our portfolios. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from skiff.com. Brian and I are going to talk a little bit more about the Aeromexico crash this week, and also rising oil prices and how that might affect what you're going to pay to fly anytime soon, if it hasn't already. Brian will be in our second segment this morning at about 5:40. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are flat to negative this morning. Dow futures down about 2 points. S&P futures are flat. NASDAQ futures are up just about 6 points. Around the globe, markets are generally higher in Europe, with the FTSE and the DAX up more than 0.5%. The CAC is up about 1/3. And in Asia, markets are generally negative. The Nikkei, the positive, one of the positive numbers there this morning, but that's up just a fraction. The Hang Seng is off about 0.25%, and the Shanghai is off about 1%. Oil is trading this morning at $68.91 a barrel, which is down about 5 cents. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. Of course, the big jobs report due out today. We'll talk with Paul about that momentarily. Perhaps 191,000 jobs created last month. We'll see what the unemployment rate does. Also yesterday, CBS, in its conference call, the embattled CEO Les Moonves, not making any statement about possible allegations of sexual assault or harassment at the company. During a Thursday conference call with industry analysts, nothing mentioned about that. As a matter of fact, people were not even allowed to ask questions about that, but they didn't anyway. The CEO not mentioning anything about that, but did say he is confident about the company's future. CBS had a good earnings report yesterday. So those are some of the headlines we're watching this morning, but the big one is the jobs report today. Paul Nolte is here. He's the portfolio manager and SVP at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, with us every Friday. Paul, good morning.
Nice to be with you again.
Oh, there we go. Let's take two.
Good morning, sir.
I mentioned that I think the AP has 191,000 as their estimate. I've seen others as well. What were you going to peg it at?
This one is as all of these so far this year are all very important ones. And anything really over 175, the revisions are going to be important to the back months. So we're sticking to the 190,000 to 200,000. The ADP report was very good. The weekly jobless claims, again, all of those are supporting very good job growth. And, of course, the focus really is going to be on wages. And are we finally maybe this time going to see a little bit of wage growth?
And there is some indication that we may get a good number today from that, from the ADP report and also from a couple of reports earlier this week.
Yeah, and when you take a look at the ISM manufacturing data, you look at the ADP report, it's indicating maybe 2.7, 2.8. And as we've talked about, 3 is kind of that mid-range from a historical perspective for wage growth. And if you look at it at 2.7 and you look at the CPI, PPI number, it's pretty much a wash. So, yeah, you know, the inflation rate's pretty much sucking away all the wage gain that we're seeing on a real basis.
For those of you who are not economists at home, that means whatever you got as a pay raise went out to pay the gas or the other bills.
Exactly. The higher cost of living.
One of the reports I liked this week about jobs was the Employment Cost Index, showing that employers are paying a lot more to keep and get new employees.
And it's one of the things we've been looking at for a long time. The Phillips curve and all of the stereotypical models that every economist graduated college with would indicate that right now we should be seeing significant wage growth. And that's why we're really kind of anticipating this to really start to take off. We saw it in the January report early in February, and that led to the market sell-off. I don't know if the market's really kind of figuring that we're going to see that wage growth. You know, they're kind of like, yeah, we've been crying wolf now for months, and we will worry about it when it gets here. And we are, I think, very close to that point.
And so when we see the wage number go up, the markets go down, that's for what reason?
Because the Fed's going to be in play. You know, the Fed came out this week in their FOMC minutes. They did not raise rates, and that was certainly expected. But in their memo, they basically said the economy is strong, getting stronger, and we're seeing strong reports from the employment sector and construction and everything else. So I think you saw the word stronger half a dozen to a dozen times throughout the report. So the markets are anticipating they're going to raise rates in September when they next meet.
Yeah, it was odd to see that many strongs. It's not normally like that. You don't normally see that.
No, they're very middle of the road-ish, and you usually have to parse it through, and you have to get out your thesaurus to figure out what they're trying to talk about. This was pretty plain and straightforward. So the markets are anticipating two more hikes this year to get us the 4, and at least 2, if not 3, next year, which, if the long end of the curve stays about where it's at, the long-term interest rates, will have an inverted yield curve before the end of this year.
Two more rate hikes. What is it looking like, September and December?
Yeah, those will be the next two meetings. And then after the first of the year, every meeting will be live. So each meeting, unlike this one, where all they do is they send out a report, will get a press conference from the chairman.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a break here, Paul, and continue. We'll have more to say about the economy and jobs and that sort of stuff with Paul Nolte.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's here with us every Friday talking about the jobs report coming today and some other economic news and portfolios. Paul, any other surprises, any other things to watch for in the job report today?
Those are the real big ones to take a look at, is the wage growth and probably the composition of where the jobs came from. We've seen a big jump in manufacturing jobs over the last year. Those tend to be a little bit higher paying jobs, and that should feed into the wage growth. We've seen some pretty good job growth from the service side, hotels, restaurants, et cetera, and that is likely to continue. But really, it's going to be the composition of the jobs and where they're coming from that's going to be important to see.
How long can we keep seeing numbers like 190,000 and 170,000? And
you know, it's been going on a lot longer than most thought. And you and I have kind of joked about how low can the unemployment rate go. And like the limbo, it can go lower. And, you know, we talked about a year ago, 3.5%. 3.9% is in the sights right now. And we're hearing more people talk about 3.5% as a real possibility. And again, if wage growth really picks up, the counter to that is going to be we'll see a more aggressive Fed. And if that's the case, then we could see trouble for the equity markets going forward with an aggressive Fed that's going to be raising rates.
And so that's a good question, a good segue. If that is what we see happening, How do we adjust our portfolios and our investments for that?
You know, we've talked about being a little bit more on the conservative side here, and the markets have gone sideways in an interesting fashion over the last couple months or so, and it's shifted away from the international markets, and it's been really more of a U.S.-centric market, and it's been dominated by the FANG stocks, even with Facebook and Netflix kind of falling after their reports of the last couple of weeks on earnings. So we're back to what we've been seeing for the last 4 years, where it's been a S&P 500 centric market. So you really want to have exposure still, I think, to the technology sector and U.S. stocks broadly. But I still think from the next 3 to 5 year window, international is very inexpensive here. And as we work through some of the trade issues, I think you'll see the international markets pick up. If we do get the markets to come back a little bit, short-term bonds, cash are very good alternatives. And we've seen those do very well in prior market declines.
Do we pay attention at all, or should we pay attention at all to the Bank of England raising interest rates for the first time since 2008, or no?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because you've had the Bank of Japan continuing on their way of quantitative easing, and we've heard from Mario Draghi this week, so we had our banker palooza this week. We've had all the central banks out talking about their interest rates. It was unusual to see the Bank of England actually raising rates, so they have joined now the United States doing that. But money is fungible, and it travels around the world, so you can very easily borrow money at the Japan rates and go and invest them at the U.S. rates, and we see a lot of that money movement going on. So even though we're tightening, you still have very easy monetary policies in Europe and Japan.
We had a money pool going, by the way, about whether or not you'd be the first to mention Lollapalooza in some way to work in some sort of law.
I try.
I think Bennett Wakenet, our producer, won the pool on that one. So what else should we be looking out for as we move into the weekend and next week?
You know, we're winding down the earnings season. We'll see some economic data, obviously big ones today. We'll see a little bit more early next week. We'll get the inflation numbers, which will be important. And then we kind of are quiet from August into September. And then October, we go through that cycle again. So we would anticipate seeing the markets generally be quiet, if not decline a little bit in the August-September period. Historically, this has been the two weakest months of the year. We're coming into a midterm election season. The markets tend to be a little bit soft in advance of the elections and then take off once we get past the elections into the first quarter of the following year. So if the historical pattern follows, we should see the markets trade sideways to down over the next 6 weeks or so. But nothing, I don't think, yet that's going to be a significant decline where you're going to have to rearrange portfolios significantly. So maybe more tweaking than anything else.
How big of a deal is it that Apple hit $1 trillion in valuation?
Yeah, they now have four commas in the market valuation. I don't think it's really all that significant. It's just a sign that they're continuing to do well. You've got Amazon, Microsoft right behind them at $800 billion. So it was just a matter of time before a company got to that market size. But when you take a look at the FANG stocks as a whole, their market cap value, so Apple at $1 trillion plus the other ones, that's about 20% of the GDP of the entire United States, the value of those companies. So we're talking about some very, very large companies. Apple is 4.5% or so of the S&P 500. So when you talk about investing in the S&P 500, realize that 4 to 5% of your money is investing in Apple.
Is that too, we often hear that phrase, too big to fail and too big. Are those companies getting too big?
I don't think so. But, you know, when you go back through history and take a look at the top five companies in the S&P 500, they don't stay there forever. So, you know, it very well could be that we're going to see another company come up that we're not aware of right now that continues to grow and surpasses Apple or Amazon. It's hard to fathom that, but, you know, we had ExxonMobil, we had IBM, we've had General Motors. All of those companies were among the top five companies in the last 30 years or so. And if they don't continue to innovate and catch the next trend, they're going to be left by the wayside. And many are accusing Apple of doing that. They don't, or they're not as innovative as many would like. They're kind of just tacking things on here. But it, in my eyes, Apple is really more of a consumer stock. Once you're in their network, an ecosystem, it's kind of hard to get out of that ecosystem, and they're doing very well with it.
You know, and but I have to play the devil on this one, because you and I are both old enough to remember the front pages of the newspapers in 1997.
Oh,
when everybody
absolutely.
Pronounced Apple dead.
Oh, twice. Yeah, twice. When they first came out, they were kind of, this is kind of interesting, and it was only really used in academia because of the graphics and everything else. And then again in 97, they got bypassed, brought Steve Jobs back as CEO, and that was really the transformation part of the company. So they will go through these cycles, and it's very possible we can see them stumble, Amazon stumble. You know, to believe that this company will last forever, they may last forever, but to be number one forever is a very difficult a leap of faith. We thought IBM was going to be that. Xerox even was going to be that. Technology changes, and unless the companies can change with it, they'll move down.
All right, Paul, very good. Have a great weekend. People can find you where again?
They can email me at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and I'd be happy to chat with anybody that wants to take a look at their portfolios.
Well, very nice. Well, we're happy to chat with you here every Friday, and we'll see you again next week.
Absolutely.
All
thank
right.
you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago startup Sugar has built a smartphone app that uses artificial intelligence to match users with restaurants, similar to a dating app. Users answer 10 questions about what kind of food they like, their budget, and location by swiping left or right on answers, just like Tinder. Redbox is launching its first major ad campaign. The Oakbrook Terrace-based DVD kiosk maker is set to launch a nationwide marketing push as the company proves that the physical DVD industry is far from dead. Redbox holds nearly 40% of the video rental market share. And McDonald's has unveiled the Mac coin in celebration of the Big Mac's 50th birthday. Unlike Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, Mac coin is a physical coin customers can get with the purchase of a Big Mac and use to purchase another Big Mac through the end of the year. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Lots of aviation news to talk about this week. And we're happy to welcome in as our regular Friday guest, Brian Summers, airline business reporter for skift.com. Brian, as always, is with us via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, I want to start first with the Aeromexico crash. Amazingly, everyone on board that plane survived, some people with injuries. But let's get first your take on that.
It really is remarkable. You know, this happened on Tuesday, and I was doing something else when it happened, and I heard from my editor, and he said that there was a plane crash and that apparently everyone had survived, more than 100 people. And I sort of thought to myself, that sounds impossible. You know, either it wasn't a crash and it was just some sort of basic accident, or people should have died. And in this case, anybody who has seen the videos or the photo can see that the aircraft was really totaled and it went on fire and it was disastrous. And yet we understand that all 103 people on board, including some infants, survived this Aeromexico crash on a Embraer E190. It's a testament to aviation safety. I mean, we may find out in the future that there was some sort of error that caused this to happen. Maybe the aircraft shouldn't have taken off in a rainstorm or something like that. But I think because we don't know what happened at this point, it's probably best to say, you know, wow. The plane stayed intact for long enough for people to get out. Everyone is generally okay. I think the captain was pretty seriously injured, but nobody else. And it's remarkable.
What does this say about the way airplanes are built these days?
Well, I think we've talked about this before a little bit, Steve. You know, there were a lot of crashes in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even up until the 90s. And aircraft engineers would take the information of what had happened in the past, and they had said, okay, well, let's build the aircraft to be a little bit safer. So now, you know, I'm not going to say that people aren't going to die. We're going to have massive, scary crashes. But look, airplanes are better constructed. Safety standards are better. We have things like even seat covers. You know, they are going to burn eventually, but they're going to burn much more slowly. You have airports. I don't know what the case was in Durango, Mexico, but generally we're seeing fewer obstacles on the runways. So that means if you're at an airport and you're having trouble taking off or landing, you know, you're not going to hit a light post or whatever you might hit on the ground in the same way that you might have 30 or 40 years ago. I found this remarkable statistic this week from the Associated Press. It said about 56% of passengers survive airline accidents in which at least one person is killed. So it means we just don't have as many of those accidents where every single person on the plane dies. It's very impressive.
You know, you mentioned the video. I've seen a couple of these videos as well. You hate to encourage people to be filming some of this stuff when it happens, but do you think that having the video will help safety inspectors figure out what happened here?
Yeah, the video probably will help regulators decide what happened. But we need to caution people about this, Steve. I mean, look, when you have an emergency like this, it's best not to take off your phone. Take out your phone. It's best not to do a lot of other things as well. You know, we see emergency evacuations, not as much here because it was so scary, but we see other ones where people bring their carry-on luggage off the aircraft. You know, when you're on the plane, you don't know exactly what's happening. If the flight attendants tell you to get off the airplane, you have to get off the airplane without your luggage. You can get your luggage later.
Ryan, let's move on to perhaps higher prices for fares, for other things on airlines. We chatted about this a little bit last week. Oil prices are driving this. What have you been learning from earnings calls?
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't say that airlines are skittish about higher fuel. We've talked about this before. Sometimes fuel goes up, sometimes it goes down. But depending on how you think about it, it's up maybe about 50% over the last 14 months. And that means that ticket prices have to go up. I wrote this week that sort of the good times for travelers are probably just about over. And when I say good times, I'm talking about 2016, 2017, I think, where people didn't realize how good they had it. You know, if you want to travel Christmas week or Thanksgiving week, you're always going to pay high fares. I know people hate that. It's probably the same for July and August. But we saw some days in 2016 and 2017, especially out of Chicago, a competitive market, where you were just seeing fares as low as $19, $29, $39, $49. We're going to see a lot less of that going forward. And all those people that had been complaining in 2016, 2017, I think we're going to wake up one day and be like, wow, you know, we didn't realize how good we had it. But that's what happens sometimes when fuel goes up.
How bad do you think it's going to get? I mean, you've mentioned those prices there. Are we talking double, triple those prices, or what can you predict, if anything?
It's really hard to say, Steve, how much prices are going to go up. I don't think it's going to be a disaster. Airlines are modeling something like $75 a barrel fuel. Just as a point of reference, about 10 years ago, 2008, fuel hit almost $150 a barrel, and that's when airlines were just completely freaking out. That's actually how we got baggage fees for the first checked bag, because American Airlines looked at its numbers and they said, you know, we can raise prices, but that's probably not enough. We need new fees. In this case, airlines are going to try to raise prices when they can. Remember, they also want to fill seats. So it's a supply and demand business. So they're going to raise prices as much as they can. But at the same time, you know, they want 80 to 90% load factors. So it's tough to do, but airlines will figure it out.
And part of your story suggests, too, that a couple of the airlines are talking about not running these flights that have low capacity, right? I mean, they're actually thinking and doing some strategic planning here.
Yeah, you know, one of the first types of flights that goes away is what we would call utilization flying. And I'm on the West Coast. I'm here in Los Angeles, so I know it pretty well. You're an airline like United or American. You have a plane that's probably going to sit overnight in Los Angeles and not fly, which means it's not going to make you any money, but it's also not going to lose you any money. When fuel is cheap and times are good, you can actually fly that plane, say, from Los Angeles to Chicago. It can leave at about 9:30 at night when it would usually be sitting. It can arrive in Chicago maybe at 4, 4:35 a.m., and then it just flies straight back to Los Angeles, maybe at 6 a.m., and it's back in time to fly the schedule that it would have flown anyways. People know that they don't generally like red eyes, and folks generally don't like 6 a.m. flights. So in order to have flights like that, you have to drop your prices. And at this point, airlines are saying, you know what, maybe this so-called utilization flying, maybe flying that extra red eye from the West Coast in Chicago and dropping the prices, just doesn't work at $75 a barrel fuel.
So in addition to fares possibly going up are we going to see potentially new fees or the same fees with higher with increases?
Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to see any new fees. It's hard to know what else airlines could charge for, but maybe we'll find out. We'll probably see maybe higher fees, something that airlines have talked about for a long time, but it turns out it's harder to do than you would think, is changing the prices of the fees depending on how popular a flight is. So maybe the price of a checked bag on a Tuesday in September on a flight that's mostly business travelers, nobody wants to check their bag on those flights anyways, maybe you can actually lower the price on that flight. But when you're flying on December 26th and you're going from Chicago to Cabo San Lucas and everybody on the plane has bags and they're desperate to bring their bags, maybe you actually charge a little bit more. Again, that's harder than people think, which is why we now have one price for all bags. But eventually airlines hope to get more sophisticated at that, and they might be prodded to move a little bit faster if fuel prices keep going up.
All right, Brian, good chatting with you as always. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter. And make sure you follow Brian as well. Brian Summers, that's Brian with an I, at Brian Summers. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report at skift.com/airline with the cool airline news from Brian arriving in your inbox.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're looking for a flat open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures are up just a fraction each. Gold is trading lower this morning by about 370 an ounce. Silver is lower as well. More on commodities and agriculture now, and good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning to you, Steve, and we're continuing to watch that wheat market show strength. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, wheat futures went up to a three-year high. Concerns about tightening global supplies and reduced shipments from some key suppliers. You know, it was about 3 or 4 years ago that we were awash with wheat in the world. I mean, we had more wheat than we knew what to do with. But again, proving that weather can change things quickly, we're now looking at concern over a short crop in Australia, a short crop in Russia, a short crop in the Baltic Sea area, and a short crop in Germany and France. All coming in out this past week with reduced wheat concerns, or I should say the concern over wheat coming in at lower yields than we were looking for. So the wheat market is one of those markets we're keeping an eye on. China yesterday urged the United States to, quote, calm down and return to reason after the Trump administration sought to ratchet up pressure for trade concessions by proposing a higher 25% tariff on $200 billion worth of Chinese exports and imports. And So anyway, that trade talk has been going now for 6-7 months, and we're still waiting to see how impactful it's going to be on the market.
Orion, on that, it kind of feels like we're playing a game of chicken, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah, because one day the market will be up, and it's because of the trade war, and the next day the market will be down, and it's because of the trade war, and it's talk. And, you know, we keep shooting at each other, but I don't think we're hitting each other yet. There's no question that we have lost some market in soybeans. But the other thing that was of interesting interest this week, ADM and Bunge reporting better than expected results in their earnings. And it was happening because of all of the trade talk and its impact on the market. So I guess we're really going to have to wait and see if the bluster and the talk becomes reality. And you're right, it's a chicken game.
I saw a headline this week, and I wanted to click on it, but it disappeared too quickly, about NAFTA. Finally, it looks like some movement to finalize NAFTA.
Mexico really wants to get it done, and they've been talking for the past month or so optimistically about NAFTA and getting the new agreement written in a couple of months. We've heard this, of course, now for a year or so, but I think that maybe the United States is making some concessions on the NAFTA situation, and Canada and Mexico, I think, are still wanting very much to have that kind of a trade agreement with the three countries. Of course, the Trump administration has been saying, well, maybe we'll go unilaterally instead of a three-way agreement. Maybe we'll work out an agreement with Mexico, and then we'll go to work on the agreement with Canada. Dairy is still a sticking point with the Canada negotiators, but they are talking, and they will continue to talk, and who knows, maybe they'll surprise us one of these days.
Yeah, well, surprise would be good. What's on the morning show tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning we'll be talking to Jim Fazell about gardening. It's time to start the fall garden, and he's going to talk about getting that going. And then we're talking to Paul Georgie of Allendale, who is a great market analyst, and he's going to offer his ideas on the impact of the trade war and trade talk that we've just been talking about. So they'll be with us tomorrow.
All right. Orion, we'll be listening, and have a great weekend.
You too, my friend.
All right. Orion Samuelson, it's the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August the 3rd. Here's what we expect today. Of course, the big jobs report, the July employment data due out today. The Commerce Department will also report on the U.S. trade gap for June. The Institute for Supply Management, a trade group of purchasing managers, issues its index of non-manufacturing activity for April. Berkshire Hathaway, among those companies reporting quarterly financial results today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, August the 3rd.